Welcome to Darkness to Nightmare.
This is a mini-sode mini-series that will take a look at monsters and what they have to say about humanity. We're Alan and Em, and welcome to Darkness to Light. This is the third of our October mini-sodes, which we are calling Darkness to Nightmare. And today, we are going to fill out our Abrahamic trifecta.
Because even though we're talking about monsters, this is still Darkness to Light.
And this episode is going to be all about the Master of the Night, the Vampire. I'm going to be honest, this one doesn't have as much historical, mythic, behind it.
And I think to the extent that it does, everyone knows it. Vlad Dracul, and then Bram Stoker, Nosferatu, Anne Rice, Twilight. All right, bye!
Good, we have done the complete history of vampires.
Episode over!
Okay, this episode is not going to be that short. As much as some people on this podcast might want it.
Hey.
But it does mean that this is probably going to be the most pop culture heavy episode.
Yes.
Because the other ones, you know, especially, you know, we talked in Jin, there was a little bit of convincing, of proving, okay, does it really deserve to be on the list of monsters? Vampire is the prototypical supernatural, spiritual creature.
And it's not like with Frankenstein, there's this secret Jewish golem behind it that you might not know. With vampires, there's the secret Catholic Italian church. Oh, wait, everyone knows that's obvious.
Yeah.
It's like how much this is a medieval, I mean, it's crucifixes and it's Italian. It's, what did you?
Okay, one of the funniest Tumblr posts I've ever seen says, the more you look into vampire mythology, the more you think it's just a giant anti-Italian, conspiracy. You can't eat garlic in Italy.
Wait a minute.
You can't go outside in the sun in Italy. You can't cross running water in Italy. You can't look in a mirror in Italy.
The crucifix
is gonna kill Italy.
You. This is, wait a minute. This is Italianism at its core.
This is some solid anti-Catholic, anti-Italian sentiment.
Wait a minute. I mean, to me, the interesting thing, just the nature of where and when we got these legends in the 16, 17, 1800s, in the middle of Europe, in the Gothic era. You have to remember, these things weren't written as period pieces originally. They were contemporary novels in their contemporary places, which happened to be loaded with Catholicism, and those trappings have stuck, which I think is pretty awesome, actually.
I mean, yes.
It works. There is so much stuff in that.
I think if we're going to talk about classic vampires, because you can go back to, the 14 and 1500s, where there was some sort of, blood-sucking wood spirit that sort of existed, maybe in, rural Romania, but
if I can quote Dana Scully, you're not going to talk about that goat-sucking chupacabra thing again, are you, Mulder?
Not today. But we are going to talk about Dracula. Bram Stoker's novel basically set the template for what the vampire was. And every single thing since then has either been a takedown, a reaction to, a version of, or parody of that one novel.
Have you ever read the original? Because it is creepy as all get out.
I haven't. And can I just say, the fact that I had to read Frankenstein, no direct disrespect to Mary Shelley, and I didn't get to read Dracula is a straight up crime.
Now, this is one that our friends Tom Panarese and Stella from the Required Reading podcast can confirm, but my hunch is that Dracula is about three times as long as Frankenstein and is really, really creepy. And not just Dracula. I mean, Renfield, the aide, and what he was doing with the flies and the insects and it was...
My skin is already crawling.
I'm pretty sure that's why. That's why it might not have passed
muster for a 10th grade Christian high school English class.
It is creepy as all get out and longer than you would thought, though again, that just may have been my experience reading it. Made it seem a lot longer than it was. But I definitely think that you're right between that and then the visualization mm-hmm. from Nosferatu and the early Draculas on screen. That is what a vampire is.
That is
the template, in the same way that Romero is the template for what zombies are. You know, when you create something out of whole cloth like that, you too literally set the template for it.
Yeah.
Which is why things like vampires that can go out in the sun, whether it's Blade, the vampire who was the vampire hunter, those sorts of things, anything that's just a little different, mm-hmm. sparkling... Though anything that's a little different is controversial, for one thing, in the field.
It stands out at the very mm-hmm, least. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel it's a little bit of a unfortunate trope, because there's always, at least in modern vampire stories, this feeling that vampires have become passé. Mm-hmm. And so you always either need to add something new, or possibly also make fun of an old vampire thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of frustrates me, because, yeah, we all know the weaknesses of vampires. You don't have to, like, sit here and try and defend why three of them are real and two of them are made up and silly. Like, they're all made up and silly. The thing is that when you put all those things onto the actual monster itself, the monster itself is terrifying. It preys on humanity. It is relentless. It is literally a bloodsucker. It comes for you in the night, and it will steal away your blood and maybe your soul.
It's interesting that, spoilers, we'll probably talk about zombies at some point in this series, but zombies going after brains and vampires going after blood. I'm not sure what there is there that's different, but there is something noticeably different about that. I'm not quite sure.
Check back with us in 4 weeks for episode like 6 of this series, and we'll see if we'll
no
see
promises, if, but we'll see.
We'll see if we were able to follow that trail, pull that thread to somewhere interesting.
And then maybe it's the trappings of the gothic aspect of the origin,
mm-hmm.
and the castles and the capes, and then the early visualizations of the classy old money vampire, that the weird romanticism gets worked in a lot of these more modern pop cultural aspects. There's something, you said, animalistic. There's something sensual, sexual mm-hmm. going on with some versions of vampires as well. It's not a hard stretch to get to that. It's the first of the animals that we've talked about, first of the monsters that are humanoid,
mm-hmm.
that can hold a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Golem couldn't. Djinn, you might not want to. There are these weird positive aspects of vampires that have been latched onto the last couple of decades.
Yeah.
In an age of anti-heroes, vampires were just there waiting to be mined in Buffy and Angel, etc., etc., etc.
Everything written by Anne Rice.
It was all about that. And there's this weird, there's so many different things that I'm trying to get at that vampires can tap into. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of why, as a genre,
they're everywhere.
They don't die.
They're immortal. And not to be a mythology hipster, but I definitely am. I guess this is because I was born in the 90s and always sort of grew up with the modern goth vampires, but I really miss the gothic vampires. Mm-hmm. And I don't know sort of at what point we got comfortable as a society with vampires.
Right.
But I kind of...
I think it may have been Anne Rice.
Yeah, it was probably Interview that, mm-hmm. that really did it. Because mm-hmm. it does, in that book, it really does delve into the, maybe not humanity, but the personality and the
When you have existence. Tom Cruise playing you in a movie, you've pretty okay, much arrived as a heroic, not even an anti-hero.
Can we all just take a moment and point out that Tom Cruise is just vampire propaganda? Like, can we all just acknowledge that as a society? There were some strings pulled by some possible immortal, possible blood-sucking, possible elites of some possible societies.
To get Tom Cruise as your front man?
I'm just saying.
And the second book, The Vampire Lestat, is about Lestat becoming known as a vampire, fronting a vampire rock band called The Vampire Lestat. I'm not saying that's good. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying that was part of it. That between Rice and between Cruise and Brad Pitt and Kirsten Dunst in that movie. It's not a great movie. It's a heck of a cast. And like you say,
it's a heck of a cast with some really good scenes.
Must have been some Hollywood strings. I like your theory to get those as the face of your monster. That's a pretty good PR move. Pretty good PR move.
How can you call a monster at that? Well, I mean, but
hey,
like, I really kind of miss mm-hmm. not the goth vampire, but the right. gothic vampire. Because there would is say some...
this is what in I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think in comic books this is why the 1970 to 75 Tomb of Dracula is so popular, because it's right at the end. It is Dracula as a mean villain. He's nice when he has to be in order to be a villain.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost the end of that era to some extent. It's a modern, the one of the more modern versions of that classic, just classic Dracula.
Yeah. I miss it. Mm-hmm. That's the thing is, I never lived in a pre-Anne Rice world. It makes me a little bit sad. Granted, Anne Rice got us eventually to Twilight, which eventually got us to the Reformed Vampire Support Group.
That
which is one of my favorite vampire books.
Catherine Jenks, I want to say, is author, the author.
Same author as Girl Genius. And
that's right.
Sort of takes a similar mm-hmm. sardonic, but very biting, satirical but still managing to play it straight take on vampires.
Mm-hmm.
There's some great stuff in that book, and it is one of the great parodies in that it manages to be both a yes. good complete story, which is a one-for-one parody of Twilight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that it skips out on most of the things that you usually make fun of about Twilight. It skips out on the bad stalkery romance. It doesn't touch on the sparkling. But if you've read Twilight and you look at the cast, you're like, oh, yep, that's Carlisle and Emmett and Edward and Bella and Jacob. Yep, there they all are.
Now, one of my proudest moments as a father
mm-hmm.
was you getting about, I'm going to guess, 15 pages into Twilight Book 3.
Maybe like two chapters.
Before throwing it across the room.
Yeah. Let me just say, it was a library book. And it was a close call as to whether or not it was going out the window. I legit opened the window and stood there and thought about it.
In the interest of full disclosure, I've read all four.
You have. You are insane. I was going to say stronger than me. You are insane.
Not because I thought they were good. Let me emphasize that fact.
We put them on the same bookshelf, metaphorically, as Left Behind. You read
there
them all
go.
Because they're important.
They were at the time, to some extent still are. There's an aspect of me that wants to be culture current.
Yes.
And Twilight was, sadly,
big culture.
Part of the culture that I was attempting to be current with. let's just sort of shout out a couple other vampire, again, bits of pop culture, the sort of parts of it that we like. If you're interested in sort of this type of being, some, you know, suggestions perhaps. I enjoyed a series called The Vampire Chronicles. Now, that's not the world's most inventive name. Check out the author P.N. Elrod. And it's 12 novels that take place in 1930s Chicago between the wars, featuring Jack Fleming, private investigator.
Who is also a vampire.
Well, there is that too. That's actually one of the things that you can do with vampires. You can give them night jobs.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of bits of pop culture, TV, and movies that have done that, that have played on this nightlife aspect. That's part of the glamour of the vampire, is that the vampire doesn't have to hold a 9-to-5 office job, because guess what? They're asleep during the boring part of the day. They're only awake during the exciting, glamorous part of the day.
Or the seedy, disturbing part, depending on how your novel goes.
There is that too, yes.
I don't know how straight that premise is played.
Pretty straight, actually.
But I'm gonna be honest, I have a soft spot in my heart for Jack the Ripper stories.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of Edwardian London stories that involve vampires and mm-hmm. 1930s Chicago. That sort of gangster
mm-hmm.
and PI, Maltese Falcon, noir style things.
You could see how it could work. Let me just say that.
You know,
you could see how that could work.
To Edwardian slum, mm-hmm. to nightlife Chicago. I can see a through line there that could be genuinely good. Now, you also mentioned to me something called the Nathaniel Cage series.
This is by Christopher Farnsworth. The first two in the series are Blood Oath and The President's Vampire.
Which I'm going to guess is taken significantly less seriously.
This must have been in the era of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Because in this case, Nathaniel Cage is a vampire who is sworn to protect the U.S. president by a blood oath, beginning with Lincoln. And he has been serving the president as the super secret Secret Service agent for 150 years.
See, this is the thing.
It's goofy and it's humorous and it's not bad.
I have mixed feelings on these because I really like vampires to be legitimately scary, monstrous things. In my mind, the best vampire that we've seen in the last 25, 30 years of pop culture is probably T2, the T-1000 Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
That is what I think of when I think of a vampire. Something that is endless, unkillable, unstoppable, uncaring, capable of pretending emotion, able to trick and connive and control, but feels absolutely no empathy. Yeah,
anytime you have one of these heroic vampires, whether it's your 1930s PI or True Blood or Blade or whatever it is, you have to figure out, okay, how are they not going to really be a vampire?
Yeah.
And by that I mean, how are they going to get their sustenance? 1930s Chicago, lots of slaughterhouses. Boom. He has his supply of blood without having to hurt or kill a human. Then you have the ones who will prey on the evil people. And I kind of like that as well, because at least there you are getting this horror version that you're talking about. I think there is a point when you stray too far from that. It's not really a vampire. It's guy with a cool accent and probably some cool hair and shades. It's just a cool guy at that point. If it's not actually killing people, it's just a cool guy.
It's just a cool guy in a black trench coat. Like, okay, guys, we've all seen The Matrix. But that's not to say that sort of like silly vampire stories mm-hmm. have no place in things. I have not read the book, but I did quite enjoy the silliness that was the movie Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. It's usually not really my thing. The Reformed Vampire Support Group has a little sort of tongue-in-cheek aspect, mm-hmm. but it is the way that it's represented there. Vampirism is a disease.
Mm-hmm.
And these people all have this horrible, crippling curse, which makes them physically feeble and forces them to do really gross things, like feed on guinea pigs.
But the aspect of the support group gives you that sense of addiction. That's partly what they're playing off of there.
And there is that, you know, compulsion. The compulsion mm-hmm. to feed right. and things mm-hmm. like that. So it does deal with those horrors, and it puts them on a very personal level of like, this mm-hmm. is a horror that this person has to live with and is able to not inflict on other people, but they still have to suffer. I think that's pretty good and interesting, and I very much like that book. But I do also like silly vampires every now and then. I very much enjoy the TV show Angel. I have watched, I think, the first two and a half seasons while it was on Netflix. It might be off now. Mm-hmm. Genuinely really love that show. It is, in my opinion, better than Buffy in literally every way.
I assume you've gotten to the Christian Kane character.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Were you watching to get to the Christian Kane character?
No.
Sort of.
A little. So, I like my silly vamp. I like my vampire singing karaoke at a demon bar. And... because everybody has one, I want to give my pitch for a vampire novel. So when we were talking about all of these things and the clear anti-Catholic sentiment that is vampire hunting, I was thinking to myself, just like crucifixes, you know, all of this pomp and circumstance and excess, you know, sort of surrounding like the Eucharist and stuff, or the general opulence and the strict hierarchy and the amount of money that's like really involved in this sort of thing, you know, the over the top robes and all of the
Wait
ceremony.
A minute.
I'm like, the Catholicism comes through really strong. Who would be our hero fighting against the evils of these vampiric cardinals trying to suck the life out of the common people? Oh, wait, Martin Luther, vampire hunter. His most famous picture even has a mallet in it. He can stake some fools.
Well, over on our show, Shortbox Showcase, our mainstream pop culture-ish podcast, I mentioned at one point my unfinished Christian vampire novel.
Which, no joke, is probably the best NaNoWriMo project you have ever done, and I am very excited to hear your pitch.
I did a handful of them back in the day. This one, Power in the Blood.
And yes, he started writing it in 2003.
In 2061, an American Protestant missionary named Wade, because it seemed like a pretty boring name, arrives at his posting in Central Africa. He's doing Bible translation work and seminary-type teaching at an ecumenical center at the old borders of two African nations, although borders don't mean much in these days after the devastation of the water wars. Wade quickly realizes that the center is largely a ministry of the Roman Catholic Church, who are in fact good guys and not vampires.
Okay.
You see, we're diverging right here at this point. And his presence on staff represents their efforts at being ecumenical. So he's the only Protestant on staff. He gets to know Brother Paolo, the spiritual director of the center. He also meets the administrative director, Liesel. Yes, future love interest. Oh. Just laying it out there right now.
Just so you know.
Independent of each other, Wade and Brother Paolo hear rumors of strange occurrences in the surrounding villages. Visitations in the night, animal mutilations, human deaths by exsanguination. The pastors dismiss the rumors but grow concerned over the fear that is spreading in the nearby villages. They eventually focus their attention on a newcomer to the village, Griffin. We learn that he is more than 150 years old.
And his last name is McElroy.
That would be great. Because he's a vampire. Although he doesn't truly know who or what he is. So I'm taking a spin on classic vampires. I admit, it's something slightly different. It's a spiritual novel. He's possessed by a demon. Realizing the pastors suspect him, he eventually attacks Liesel, the love interest, because, you know, ever since King Kong.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's I'm sorry.
It's a classic monster movie novel.
There's no fridging. Let me just say at the outset, she is not fridged. Admittedly, finished it in 2003. There's a chance.
They have been.
Anyway.
You've grown since then.
To go further, would be spoilers. Just say that both of our pastors have to go outside of their comfort zones. The intellectual, academic Protestant has to get his hands dirty, and the Catholic brother has to learn that maybe the evangelical has some knowledge about these things as well. And then there are many happy endings.
And an exorcism. So.
Yes. So that was my pitch for my vampire novel. Because, as we've established,
everyone has one. So if you want to tell us about your vampire novels, or your opinions on vampires, or which
your
powers...
favorite versions in pop culture of vampires, because there are a billion things we didn't mention.
Yes.
Because they all over.
Yeah. Which power do you think is the best and most underused? Which power do you think is the silliest? I'm going to be honest. Shapeshifting. The fact that nobody touches on shapeshifting, it kills me.
Like, he occasionally turns into a bat. There's a lot more than that.
Grossly underused. Vampower. I also haven't mentioned it in the last couple of episodes, but we have a Tumblr. And if you do follow the Tumblr, you might notice that the posts and the episodes are sort of a little bit correlated.
At least, certainly during this.
During this, it's going to be all spook all the time on the Tumblr.
And come back soon for the next installment of Dorkness to Nightmare. The ringing of the bell commands you. While you're waiting for the next podcast episode, check out our websites. DorknessToLight.blogspot.com contains reviews, essays, and other similar ramblings.
And DorknessToLight.tumblr.com, which contains some of that material, as well as top tens, cool photographs, memes, and religious puns. We also run a general interest comic book podcast network, Relatively Geeky. That content can be found at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com.
Let us know what you think of this topic, this episode, or this podcast in general. Feel free to send your thoughts to us at dorknesstolight@gmail.com. We would also appreciate any ratings or reviews left for the podcast in the iTunes store to help like-minded people find us.
Our intro, outro, and promo music is by Anderson Kale. Check them out at andersonkale.com or search iTunes to purchase their music.
Thanks for listening.